top story this hour is the latest Arab Youth Survey has revealed the mindset of young Syrian refugees, and there's a surprising UAE connection. Mohammed Suleiman from the ARN News Centre joins us now in the studio to talk about the story. Good evening, Mohammed.
Evening, Claire.
Good to have you with us. Start off by telling us more about the survey and the key findings.
Right, so this is the 9th annual Arab Youth Survey conducted by Asda, Bursa and Marsteller. And this year they've gone to Jordan and Lebanon to speak with Syrian refugees between the ages of 18 and 24 who are living in settlements in those two countries. And they tried to get a better idea of the mindset of these young refugees. So the survey found that more than half of young Syrians feel they are unlikely ever to return to their homes permanently. Now, the survey also revealed a very strong UAE connection, as you mentioned. The refugees were asked which country they would most like to migrate to, and in the end, 27% said they'd like to go to Canada, 23% said the USA, and 22% said the UAE was their top pick of the country they'd most like to migrate to. Now, earlier today, I spoke with Sunil John, who is the founder and CEO of Asda, Bursa and Marsteller. I asked him why he thought Syrian youths want to come here.
UAE is seen as an open country. It's a country that provides a means for a livelihood. So I think they see UAE as a place where they could get a job and change their life. You know, I mean, when you look at the overall picture, it's a fairly negative story we have. You know, I mean, the Syrian conflict itself, 320,000 people have died. Nearly 11 million people have been displaced. You know, 6 million within Syria and another 5 million as refugees outside. And these are people who have no hope in life. And I think they want to be able to go to a place where they can change their livelihood. And I think that's where how they see UAE, as a place where their dreams can be fulfilled, as a place that will probably give them an opportunity to change their lifestyle and help their families.
The UAE is certainly seen as a beacon of hope in these kind of situations, Mohammed. But what is the UAE doing to help Syrian refugees?
Right, so the UAE has been very proactive in doing its bit for the Syrian refugee crisis. Last year, the UAE announced that it would take in 15,000 Syrian refugees over the next 5 years. Now, there are already around 300,000 Syrians living and working here in the UAE, but none of them have refugee status. So this was a big shift in the policy for the UAE, and it makes it the first GCC country to announce a major plan to allow Syrian asylum seekers here as refugees. Here is Sunil John from Asda, Bursa and Marsteller once again telling us more about what the UAE is doing to support young Syrian refugees.
I think the UAE is doing a number of different initiatives to help the refugees in the camps, both in Jordan and Lebanon. So I think that the UAE has done a number of things to support and help young refugees where they live in these camps in very dire conditions. Even basic amenities are not possible. And especially during the winter months earlier this year, I think the UAE did a number of things to be able to warm these people up and be able to, you know, continue to live. So there's a lot done.
That was Sunil John from Asda, Bursa and Marsteller explaining what the UAE is doing to support young Syrian refugees. I also asked him what they plan to do with the results of their latest Arab youth survey, and here's what he told me.
Tens of thousands of words have been written on the Syrian conflict by journalists, by think tanks, by agencies. But, you know, in all that is written, that is one voice that is conspicuous by its absence, the voice of those most affected by the war. And I think these are the young people who fled their home and their livelihoods and their future. And we think that the Arab Youth Survey should bring that voice to policymakers and the various countries involved in finding and rebuilding Syria. I think these voices should be heard and it should impact policy. That's why we do this study, to be able to help policymakers to make the right decisions.
That was Sunil John, who is the founder and CEO of Asda, Bursa and Marsteller, explaining what they plan on doing with the results of this latest Arab Youth Survey.
And just the key findings again at the top there, Mohammed.
So 22% of young Syrian refugees say that the UAE is the number one country that they'd like to migrate to from their current refugee status.
And the other top ones being the US and Canada, I believe.
US and Canada. And the fourth place actually went to France and Germany. So the UAE came in third and the first in the Arab world.
Okay, thanks very much, Mohammed Suleiman there from the ARN News Centre with that on the latest Arab Youth Survey. Now, Sally, we have been running all week a hugely popular competition, haven't we? And this is the last chance tonight to win what is a cracking prize. And really, it's kept us entertained this week because our listeners have been so utterly, utterly creative.
And we're going to be sorry to see it go, quite frankly.
I'm gutted.
Because it's just been so much fun, and no doubt today will be no different. We are, of course, giving away two passes to Laughter Factory on Friday the 11th of August, 9 p.m. at Le Meridien, Dubai. And that includes the Shellfish Obsession Dinner at Yalumba. If you don't know what that is, it is every Friday night at Yalumba from 7 p.m. The Shellfish Obsession Dinner. It's an unending array of seafood from giant lobsters, oysters, and more. And of course, we've got you covered when it comes to comedy. On Friday, the 11th of August, Nick Page is going to be making his regional debut and launch another Laughter Factory pop-up venue at Le Meridien, Dubai, known as the king of devastating punchlines. We're about to get smacked around the chops by comedy heavyweight Nick Page. If you want to win today, this is what you've got to do. And I like this because you came up with this, Claire. You need to change the title of a movie and improve it with a fish.
Great movie titles that would be better if there was a fish in them. It was hard to come up with a fifth one, wasn't it? We've had fish puns. We'd have pet lobsters. We had fish jokes.
Knock
so this
jokes,
one is
yeah.
Great movie titles. I'll give you one to start you off. How about The Codfather?
I like that one. The Codfather. Raiders of the Lost Shark. Okay. Smokey and the Barramundi.
That's so it for our clues.
You know where we're going with this. So we want you to come up with your own. And obviously the most creative one will win. And we're going to be running that all the way until just before 7 we'll be announcing the winner. So make sure you get your entries in early because people get their entries in late. And by then we've already picked the winner. So get them in early. And I can't wait to see what people are going to come up with.
4001. And your name, of course, on those messages if you'd like to be entered into the competition. Right, coming up next, we're going to be talking about dozens of expat teachers who have been given a crash course in UAE culture. It's happening at the Sheikh Mohammed Centre for Cultural Understanding, initiated by the Ministry of Education. We're going to be talking about that next.
This is Drive Live
on Dubai i 103.8.
They are coming in already, Sally. 4001 if you want to enter the competition tonight. Movie titles that would be made better with a fish in them. Somebody here, no name on this one. Do give us your name as well on 4001. Barracuda Jones.
Stian saying, The Fish from Snowy River. I like that. 50 Shades of Cray.
I like that, Alistair. Very,
Alistair.
Very good.
Good one. Another one as well, Shooting Fish to Shooting Lobsters.
Also from Al. So keep those coming in if you want to win those comedy tickets and that meal at Yalumba. But now let's talk about the cultural understanding story that we were just mentioning before. Dozens of new expat teachers have been given a crash course in UAE culture. It's a new initiative by the Ministry of Education that aims to teach educators about Emirati customs and traditions so they can easily adjust to life when they arrive in the UAE, and also, more importantly, become culturally sensitive, a trait that they can use, of course, when interacting with their students. We spoke to Rashid Al-Tamimi, a senior presenter at the Sheikh Mohammed Centre for Cultural Understanding. He had helped prepare the programme.
We take them on for culture lunch, walk tour around the area, Al-Fahedi, which is almost 200 to 300 years old, and as well the mosque visit, so that at least they can know when they are living in Dubai, they hear the adhan and they hear the call of the prayer, so they at least have a background that they were living in Arab culture and as well Muslim culture in the UAE. They really felt comfortable because they could ask us any question. Of course, they always ask you, how do you keep your kandoora so white? Why is it so white? So I said, just wash them in the washing machine. And that's it. And that's how we do it. All dry cleaning. There is something that they really enjoyed as well in the whole program as well. Not only about our what we wear, the dress that we wear, the kandoora, the abaya, the shela, the niqab, the covering of the face for the women, and all these questions. Also the qitr and agal, as well our food. What is your food? And the taste, we serve them the Emirati cultural food, which is really enjoyed.
That's Rashid Al-Tamimi. He's a presenter at the Sheikh Mohammed Centre for Cultural Understanding. They prepared this programme for new expat teachers to help them become more culturally aware when they move to the UAE. Well, I'm delighted now to be joined on the line by Nasif Kayed, who's from the Arab Culturalist and formerly Managing Director of the Sheikh Mohammed Centre for Cultural Understanding. He's with us now. Good evening to you, Nasif.
Hello, good evening. How are you?
Good. Lovely to have you on. Tell us classes and information like this are so important for anyone who is moving to the UAE.
Well, you know, landing into a new environment with multiculturals, it is very important for us to be able to know what we call it, the do's and the don'ts, but it's not necessarily as much as it is to understand how you can function correctly without offending somebody, without having a misunderstanding to how things are done in there normally in their culture. You know, we have a lot of misconceptions out there now. There is a lot of misrepresentations in the media of different cultures. And you want to know the facts rather than the stereotypes.
And Nasif, what are the kind of things, when somebody goes to a cultural awareness class or a course, what are the kind of topics that they can expect to be covered and the things that they can expect to learn about?
Well, usually I start from the bottom up. I mean, one of the very first misconceptions that people, when they arrive here, is Arabs and are you oil-rich Arabs? You live in the desert and you have oil now, and they have no idea of the history and what happened in the old days when there was pearl diving and trading. So you start with history, then you start with the culture of the Bedouin, the hospitality, the generosity, the honoring of the guest. And you talk about the traditions, you talk about the etiquette, the protocols, how you encounter, how you speak, what are the things that you should be aware of, male-female interactions, religion, you hear the call to the prayer in Dubai, in UAE, what does it mean, what is offensive or not offensive. And that really leads them to understand that, okay, now I understand, rather than, you know, be in such a dark area or for things to be ambiguous to me. And the fact of the matter is that this gives them a peace of mind. It makes us more intelligently aware of the different things that we, going to encounter. And it draws us closer to each other, because then we found out at the end of the day we're similar in history, similar in traditions and values.
The classes that were in the news today, Nasif, are specifically for teachers. Why is it so crucial for teachers to be culturally aware? I mean, I guess, you know, we want them to pass that on, right?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, when you are a teacher in the UK or the US, your most of the classes, students from within the area, you know, very few, maybe an immigrant here or there. Here you have a variety of, like, sometimes it's 20 or 30 different nationalities within the same classrooms, everybody from a different culture. So how are you going to cope with all of it? How are you going to bring them together? How are you going to create respect between them towards each other? How are you going to be able to understand the differences between, you know, the parents who bring their kids with certain, oh, we don't believe in this, or we don't do that, or we don't work this way. And even, you know, when you want to, let's say, like, review the child with their parents, how to actually express, you know, there is many factors, collective society, individualistic, shame or honor, lots of things that we teach really personally to the teacher to make them confident when they approach the students from the different multicultures and when they sit with the individual parents and have a conversation about their child.
And Nasif, what are the kind of issues that can arise if people don't take these courses and educate themselves? What kind of things can we see happen?
Look, stress, teachers stressed out, confusion. You say the wrong thing and then you create a ruckus in the classroom and it becomes, you know, oh, my teacher said this to me, oh God, how? I tell you a joke, like, you know, in the U.S. when my kids were there, my child said to the, the American child, I lived in America for a while, he said, oh, Santa Claus is not real. And student told the teacher told the principal, the parents, of course, knew about it. And they called me to the school and said, your kid has, cannot say this to our kids. And so we had to really teach my child how to understand that this is something different. And, you know, this is, you know, everybody is burdened and has really the responsibility to equip their kids. The teacher has to be equipped. And when you're equipped, you are you act much more freely, much more you know, relaxed, and you are more tactful to resolving issues rather than creating problems. Let's put it that way.
So, do you think, Nasif, that everybody who moves to live in the UAE really it's a responsibility they have to make sure that they are aware, either by taking one of these classes or for companies that bring them over to do that for them?
Absolutely. First, the teacher has to make effort on their own. That's one thing. Then I think that the company, I don't know, the relocation company is fine, you know, but or the employment company, but really the school itself. I mean, I work with a lot of schools, and like we did at, you know, at the center, we encourage these schools to invest rather than think of it as an expense to educate these teachers. I work with Tilal, which is with Gyms Education, you know, and welcoming all their teachers. Honestly, the teacher is burdened, or the teacher should make effort. The school should make effort. And if there is a company that does facilitate for these teachers to come around here, they should also make effort. So with being informed from all these angles, you should become equipped and ready to go and start your path on the right foot.
Nasif, is it one class that you need? Is it several? Some people may be thinking, oh my goodness, I've got to go for weeks or whatever. Can you just come once and visit these cultural centres to get what you need?
Honestly, I mean, look, you know, the center, when we just invite them for a meal, and we do, this is the icebreaker. This is like talking about what we call, you know, just loosen up that wall, bringing it down a little bit so we could look at each other, maybe extend our hands and shake one another. But then you have to learn. You have to understand. That's why now I do what we call Culture 101. I do what we call etiquette and protocol. And then I do what we call culture intelligence, drive knowledge, strategy, and action. It takes, I would say, 3 to 4 sessions, a couple of half-day workshops to get you equipped. And then I like to maintain 3 months later on. I like to come and say, okay, so how are we doing? What happened? What did you encounter that was confusing to you and you couldn't deal with it, or you were, you know, not comfortable with? And I think that helps. That's a good start right there.
It's good to see that there is follow-up. You know, you can come back, you can ask more questions. If there are any issues,
absolutely,
get those solved.
Nasif, one thing I want to ask you quickly before we let you go. I've been to a couple of your sessions when you were at the Centre for Cultural Understanding, and I saw people ask you such a whole range of questions, some of which you took in very good nature, considering the range of things they sort of push you on. Do you ever get offended by what you're asked?
Not at all. I think you have the right to be, you know, confused or worried or what we call it, curious. But, you know, that my answer, as long as it does not offend you, that maybe sometimes people are not willing to listen to positivity because we have been so, you know, informed so negatively that we are not willing to understand that, you know, I don't know if you remember sitting and I challenged that the black does not observe heat. Who said that? Where is it in science that it says increases your body temperature? And that's just a challenge that I put out there for them to rethink their position, is that, yeah, where did I read that it increases, but by how many degrees? That in itself should allow you what we call to open your heart and mind and allow yourself that if the answer is different than what you thought, then you're willing to accept it. I don't get offended. I want a question so I can, you know, learn more also about how to answer them.
That's great. Thank you, Nasif. Yeah, well, I have to say, you always handle them with great aplomb, if I can say that. Great to have you on this evening. Thanks very much. That's
Thank you.
Nasif Kayed from the Arab Culturalist, talking there about new cultural awareness classes that are being given to teachers at the Sheikh Mohammed Centre for Cultural Understanding. Right.
This is Drive Live
on Dubai Eye 103.8.
top story this hour is earlier this year, we were following the development, of course, of Hyperloop, a high-speed transport system that can take passengers from Dubai to Abu Dhabi in just 12 minutes. Well, the company announced that it has just completed its second phase of testing. Zina Zelameya has more.
All right, all parties ready for tests?
An official video shows the Hyperloop team testing this new mode of transport that could soon be a reality in the UAE. The test pod, as they call the body, was able to travel more than 1,400 feet on a track that had a length of more than 1,600 feet at a speed of more than 300 kilometers per hour. Reports say this was about 4.5 times longer and almost 3 times faster than Phase 1. It's believed that it has the potential to travel as fast as 1,200 kilometers per hour. A spokesperson from Hyperloop One, the firm that developed it, said they were now much closer to deploying the technology around the world. And as we know, the Emirates wants to be the first country to take advantage of it.
All right, firing in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, fire.
Last year, the Roads and Transport Authority signed an agreement with a company to explore possible routes. The U.S.-based firm said it could be up and running in Dubai by 2020 to be mainly used in cargo operations. Adding Hyperloop to the city's mass transport sector is part of the Dubai Autonomous Strategy, which aims to see 25% of commute in the Emirate go driverless by the year 2030. And there are plans to expand it nationwide. And if that happens, the typical 1.5 hour journey from Dubai to Abu Dhabi could be shortened to just 12 minutes. And your drive to a holiday resort in Fujairah could take 10. This is Zina Zelameya reporting for the ARN News Center.
Fascinating package there from Zina, Sally. And I have to say, I still find it so hard to get my head around this Hyperloop thing, but it's so incredibly exciting.
It's something that is really difficult to imagine because of the speed of what we are talking about. We're talking Dubai to Abu Dhabi in something like 12 minutes.
Yeah.
It's incredible stuff, but I can't wait to see it. Second stage of testing. We are getting closer and closer to this becoming a reality.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Now, let's talk drones and looking to aviation authorities in Dubai. They are working to create regulations which would clear the way for drones to be used for delivery services. And according to the Dubai Civil Aviation Authority, using drones to deliver goods to residents poses a unique set of security and technical challenges. They say they're already in talks with stakeholders to launch the Emirates' first drone delivery service. You could be getting your pizza by drone very soon. Michael Rudolph, he is the head of airspace safety at the DCAA. He explains what kinds of security concerns they're trying to address.
We've had a number of entities that have approached the Dubai Civil Aviation Authority to talk about a delivery service, whether it be from pharmaceuticals to other. And what we need to take into consideration is post-delivery. None of the applicants have been able to prove beyond shadow of a doubt what happens to the drone when it has done the delivery and is on the return leg. So what I'm trying to say is that how do we know that the person receiving the article or the parcel doesn't put something on the drone that on the return leg it becomes a safety issue? So that needs to be eliminated. That is a huge risk. It's about accountability and responsibility. And we need to take that, you know, look at that very carefully. It's about, are the operators going to be responsible and accountable for the delivery, the return, as well as the landing, the security, the safety oversight for the trip using this technology? And if not, how are we going to get around it?
That's Michael Rudolph. He is the head of airspace safety at the Dubai Civil Aviation Authority, talking about some of the risks that they are trying to target when it comes to drone delivery. It's going to be something that we're seeing very soon. I expect hot pizza to be coming to me by drone, but they're working out the safest and best way to do it. So this is exciting and really important to see these regulations coming in.
Well, you won't get that excuse anymore, will you? Oh, sorry, I got stuck in traffic and that's why your pizza's cold.
That's right. Exactly. So we'll see where those developments go. We'll keep you updated.